This feels like one of those lessons we're only now starting to come to grips with about Canada's historically awful treatment of its Indigenous people.
On behalf of Saskatoon Health Region, I want to apologize to the women who came forward in the review.
And if it wasn't for a looming lawsuit and an Ontario senator, most of us might even think that it was a local issue or a mistake in the past. Except it's allegedly still happening now.
For the coercion for tubal ligation that you experienced while in our care.
In Canada, Indigenous women are coming forward with stories of being coerced into undergoing medical sterilization. And while any politician you ask will tell you that's horrific and unacceptable, there's not a consensus about what's to be done.
No woman should ever be treated the way you were treated.
So first of all, how is this reportedly happening right now in Canada? But second, what's being done now that we're learning that it is? And what does this say about the lessons we're supposed to have learned from this country's shameful history? And is there anything that can be done to make this right? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
They allege sometimes medical professionals were kind of saying, this is for your own good. Also kind of making comments about the size of their families.
Christy Kirkup is the Indigenous Affairs reporter for Canadian Press. She has been pushing this story in front of government. Christy, start by telling me how this story came about and tell me about Liz.
So the story recently came on my radar for a couple of reasons. First of all, there is a senator by the name of Yvonne Boyer who recently flagged the ongoing sterilization of Indigenous women in an address to the Senate, her first address to the Senate. She was appointed to the upper chamber in the spring, and in September she decided to kind of shine a light on this issue. And the reason that she knows a lot about this, before she became a senator, Yvonne Boyer, she is a Métis lawyer, and she was among two researchers who delved into this practice in the Saskatoon Health Region after it was actually journalism that brought this all to light. It was the Saskatoon Star Phoenix that interviewed a couple of women who had alleged that they had gone through a tubal ligation against their consent and that they alleged that they were coerced into a tubal ligation in the Saskatoon Health Region. So Yvonne Boyer at the time, along with another researcher, Dr. Judith Bartlett, they looked into this issue, documented it. The Saskatoon Health Region apologized for what happened. And again, Yvonne Boyer is saying, since she produced that report, she's heard from Indigenous women from well outside the Saskatoon region, from different parts of the country who have been asking her for help. And so it was actually Liz was someone who had contacted Yvonne Boyer directly seeking help after she learned about this going on in Saskatchewan. And Liz says that she was cornered into having an abortion and a tubal ligation in the 70s in Ontario. And so that's how I was linked up with Liz. And she bravely shared her story with me. And that's why we decided to put out the report most recently about the fact that there are allegations that this is not a historical practice, but in fact, it is still happening to Indigenous women in a number of different parts of the country.
What is tubal ligation and how does that procedure work for Indigenous women who are in hospital?
So what we have heard from women who have come forward and shared their stories, and by the way, I mentioned the Saskatoon Health Region and women that were coming forward in that region, they have raised concerns that when they, you know, each individual case is different and the allegations are different and on a case-by-case basis, but they are alleging that when they went in specifically to give birth, that they were being coerced by medical professionals who, in some cases, cases, and this is outlined in the report I mentioned that was produced by Yvonne Boyer and the other researcher, that they were coerced into having either their tubes tied or burned, cauterized while they were in, like on the operating table, that they allege that they were being coerced. And they say they were obviously very vulnerable. They were in the throes of childbirth.
Right.
And their allegations are at the center of a proposed class action lawsuit, which has some 60 women now that are part of that lawsuit. And I was told by the lawyer that's been doing all this work with the firm Maurice Law that since we published our story just last week, then an additional 32 women have contacted the law firm in Saskatchewan, but also elsewhere, saying that they too have been coerced into sterilizations without their consent. So this lawsuit, proposed class action, as I mentioned, it has yet to be certified. It is really looking at the responsibility of health professionals, as I mentioned, because the allegation is that women were being coerced by medical professionals. It's also named the government of Saskatchewan, as well as the federal government. And just this week, the lawyer that I mentioned at the center of this case, she is appearing before the UN Committee Against Torture to also shine a light on what she calls the ongoing modern-day sterilization of Indigenous women, and Amnesty International Canada is also appearing before the UN committee as well about this very topic this week in Geneva.
When you say the word coerced, explain what that looks like in practice.
You know, I think for the individual women who have shared their stories, specifically the ones that are that were documented by Yvonne Boyer and Dr. Judith Bartlett, again, you know, it depends on the individual case, but what they're saying is that often, and a theme that came through in the report, is that they allege sometimes medical professionals were kind of saying, this is for your own good. Also kind of making comments about the size of their families. One thing that Liz highlighted in her interview with me, and again, we're talking about an Ontario case here and that happening in the 1970s, but she says also that she was cornered by a children's aid worker. She alleges that, again, they essentially said, you know, we're going to take your, if you have this baby, we're going to take it from you anyway. It's just going to end up in the foster care system. So again, this is for your own good. Have the abortion and get your tubes tied at the same time. And so she felt as though she was bullied into having that procedure, again, when she was vulnerable and pregnant and going through a very difficult time in her life.
There's a history of this kind of thing in Canada.
Mm-hmm. This has been documented by specifically a researcher by the name of Karen Stoat, who published a book in the last couple of years documenting historical examples of coerced sterilization of Indigenous women. And she specifically you know, is referencing that a number of women historically have even gone as far as to call this a genocidal practice.
I can't have been the only person to see the headlines about this as it kind of emerged over the past week or two and, you know, see them and kind of assume that this is something else that Canada has done in the past and we're acknowledging it now and trying to do better, only to find out that this is stuff that is still going on. What's reaction been in terms of that?
Yeah, I think that's definitely been the feedback that I've been receiving on our reporting is, wait a second, this is not a problem from, you know, the olden days. This is something that is allegedly happening right now. And one of the things, Jordan, that's been difficult for me as a reporter is, of course, we want to be able to you know, look at facts and figures,
right.
To look at, you know, documented current cases of, you know, what is, you know, what is the scope of this issue nationally, and that has been really difficult. And quite frankly, that is why Amnesty International Canada and the senator and other advocates are saying this is why a special representative needs to be appointed to look at how prevalent this is, because again, as I mentioned, just in the last week, an additional 32 women have come forward to the law firm firm that is working on the proposed class action, after reading our reporting, saying, you know, they too feel as though they were coerced into a tubal ligation, a burning, cauterizing, tying of the fallopian tubes, and were not able to, you know, have children after that. And they feel as though they were bullied into this. So again, there is that specific call for someone to be able to be appointed to hear these stories. And on a reporting level, what I'm trying to do is talk to additional victims who have also come forward to me to share their stories and to, again, to find out what exactly is going on here. One thing that Maurice Law, the law firm, has been pushing for, they say that the fastest way that the government, the federal government, can step up and help is by amending the criminal code and amending it so that forced sterilization is outlawed in the criminal code. And we've had no indications that the government is looking to do this.
Why wouldn't they do that? It seems like something that should be outlawed.
Well, and that's my question for the government. You know, again, the minister Jane Philpott got up and said, you know, essentially was delivering a message that this is horrifying and this can't happen. And again, now advocates and quite frankly the victims are saying, and this has been a message, Jordan, that I've heard very loud and clear from victims that I've spoken to. They keep saying there has to be accountability. And one woman that I spoke with, you know, said, you know, it's really hard to talk about this, and it's great that, you know, there's additional media coverage of this issue and people are talking about it as a result, but they don't just want words. Accountability yeah. is going to be really critical. And as I say, I'm just kind of in the process of trying to assess how many women potentially are alleging that they have gone through this, because again, there are the legal implications and that proposed class action lawsuit as well. How big could that get? They filed their papers, they're trying to get certified. I don't think this is an issue that's going away anytime soon.
Right. Well, it would be kind of one thing if, you know, it was localized to an area of Saskatchewan where all mm-hmm. these cases were coming from, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So what does it say to kind of the overwhelming attitude that these cases have come from all over? It's not like there was a directive on this. So this speaks to what? To assumptions? To, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that Yvonne Boyer has said is that this is an example, a clear example of systemic racism and discrimination that exists in the healthcare system. And I mentioned that Yvonne Boyer, before becoming a senator, she was a lawyer and a law professor, but at one point in time, she was also a nurse. And during her address to the Senate, she also shared how, even as a nurse, she's Métis, but she said people thought that she was white. And so she said she heard firsthand some of the comments, and this is going back, you know, in time. It's been many years since she's been a nurse, but she said she heard those assumptions firsthand, and she says that those types of mentalities, when I talk about the women who claim that the medical professionals were saying, you know, you have enough children, or the children are just going to end up in the foster care system, so we're going to help you out and move ahead with this procedure, and, you know, kind of saying that the medical system, Boyer argues, is structured so, you know, she talks about it being, you know, guardian and ward, where the medical system and those professionals in it are delivering a message to Indigenous women, we know best, we know what's best for you, as opposed to what's at the core of the proposed lawsuit, which is the legal issue of informed consent. And again, even for the women who signed on a dotted line and agreed to the tubal ligation, they're saying, well, this was somewhat, these are people who were in the throes of childbirth and they were very vulnerable, and this was not the time to be seeking their consent or applying pressure to get them to sign a form about such a really critical issue. Because, by the way, tubal ligation, some medical professionals will say in some cases it can be reversed, but in Liz's case, she tried to see if it could be reversed, and in the late 80s, she learned in Winnipeg that there had been so much damage done to her fallopian tubes that there was no way that she could ever have kids again, and this has had a devastating impact on her life, and it's still something she dreams about and thinks about today. She thinks about, she hears the baby crying in her dreams some 40 years later after going through this experience.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the class action. Like, what kind of a price can you ask a government or a medical association to pay for taking away your ability to have kids?
Yeah, so at right now, the figure that was proposed by the two lead plaintiffs was $7 million for what they had gone through. But again, the proposed class action is really growing in size. I mentioned some 60 women. So that is definitely something I think people should be keeping their eye on. And as I mentioned, there's also the element of the fact that those who are leading the charge with the lawsuit are also turning to the international community to essentially publicly shame Canada on what these women are alleging happened to them. And that is the subject of discussions playing out in Geneva this week.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, it leads to my next question, which I really don't intend to be a leading question, even though it kind of sounds like it is. So I was obviously shocked to learn this is going on now, and you say you were surprised. When you talk to Indigenous people and Indigenous leaders about this, are they surprised?
You know, I think that, the one thing that the Assembly of First Nations National Chief Perry Bellegarde said during the course of my conversation with him last week, it seems as though, again, this has kind of been on, I think in the last few years anyway, because of the Saskatoon Health Region and the report that was done there and the subsequent apology that happened in Saskatchewan, I think Indigenous leaders have been more engaged on this issue. But I think the volume is getting louder, and specifically, again, when you have Canada's human rights record being called out internationally and having attention in that regard, I think that not only are Indigenous leaders calling for accountability measures, but again, this is something that we're hearing a number of advocates have been pushing for some time. I think that one thing that they perhaps are surprised about is, again, the suggestion that this could be happening in a number of different parts of the country. And that's a part, as I say, as a reporter, that's really hard to nail down. And that's why there, I think, is this call, as I say, for someone to be specially appointed to look at this very issue and to hear testimony. And we'll see if the government moves ahead on that or not.
Thanks very much, Christy.
Thank you.
Christy Kirkup, Indigenous Affairs reporter for the Canadian Press. And that was The Big Story. For more from us, check out thebigstorypodcast.ca. That's where we live. That's where all our other episodes live. You can find us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. If you're looking for new podcasts, check out some of our brother and sister shows. Search for Black Tea or Moms in the Middle, or The Quick and the Dirty, and find them at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rowlings. We will talk tomorrow.